Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, January 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's a new tax year. Oh, yeah, and taxes for last year will have to be filed soon enough. So today, we will get some all-around tax advice from Judy Cahey and Dawn Doherty from BST, an accounting business advisory and management consulting firm in Latham, New York. You have a tax question? Give us a call right now. 800-348-2551 is our number, 800-348-2551, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org, with your tax question. Nothing too extensive, but a paragraph will work. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Yeah, buddy. Taxes with Judy Cahey and Dawn Doherty after the news. Ooh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We'll get some tax tips today from the folks at BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. Judy Cahey is a partner at BST. She has a master's of taxation from University at Albany and brings nearly 30 years' experience in the areas of individual, corporate partnership, not-for-profit, and estate and trust taxation. She works with closely held or family-owned businesses, not-for-profits, and high-net-worth individuals. Also a partner at BST, Dawn Doherty primarily focuses on medium and large business enterprises, including multi-state and multinational structures. She spent several years as a senior-level IRS agent and brings extensive tax controversy expertise to her role. Dawn is a former adjunct professor at UAlbany, where she taught individual income tax and corporate taxation. So if you have a question about taxes, this is a perfect time to call. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Judy Cahey, how you doing?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
How's biz?
Tax season is getting ready to kick off here, January 26th.
Oh, January 26th is officially tax season?
This is officially when the IRS opens up individual e-filing.
So if I wanted to file right now, I couldn't do it.
Well, it's a little hard because the documents are still coming in, right? 1099s and W-2s, and you know, employers have to the end of January to get those out to people.
Now, I heard some perhaps bluster from Washington that we're all going to get great tax refunds this year. Is it true?
We could see some better ones, right?
Really?
So we have a $40,000 SALT limit subject to some AGI limits. You know, the withholding tables didn't get revised, and some people might not have tax on their tips or their overtime this year. So things are looking a little bit favorable to have some tax refunds.
Nice. Dawn Doherty, how are things on your end of the business?
Oh, fantastic. A lot of good business. Incentives came through with the act that was enacted in 2025. We have some expanded expensing provisions for businesses that are putting assets in place. We brought back the 100% bonus depreciation. So that was a very favorable change.
What does that mean? Having never gotten a bonus, yeah. You want to tell me what that is?
Absolutely. Bonus depreciation. It's one of those nice provisions that allows certain qualified property to be expensed right out of the gate.
Ah.
So it's a very favorable provision. But the states, generally speaking, decouple from it. That means the state doesn't allow bonus depreciation. So it does create a little bit of a Fed-state difference.
Speaking
there.
Of the decoupling, and Judy, you brought up the no tax on tips and overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, let's find out where we are federally on that. And then I hear some states are trying to sort of negate that in some way. So where are we with no tax on tips and overtime?
Okay. So I'm going to try to give you a big picture answer.
Okay, good.
But there's a lot of details.
All right.
I'm going to try
to do this. We only have about 50 minutes.
And that's what it would take to tell you all
okay.
this. Okay. No tax on tips, right? We've got a temporary 2025 to 2028 exclusion for income capped at $25,000, subject to some gross income limits, right? $150,000 single, $300,000 married filing joint. Lots of details here, right? Tips have to be discretionary. There's about 60 jobs out there that the IRS published on a list that qualify. They're the kinds of jobs that customarily and regularly receive them. You can't file marry filing separate and get this. You can't get digital currency and get this. You still pay tax, Social Security, Medicare, just you're getting out of the income tax. So lots and lots of details.
So you have to calculate the Social Security and Medicare on your tips.
Yes.
Correct.
That sounds like a sticky wicket. Does anyone actually do that?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
I'm just smiling, Ray. I'm just smiling.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move on then. The number is 800-348-2551. And now overtime, same thing, same deal?
Overtime's a little bit different. It's capped at, you know, $25,000. It's a deduction. Again, it's a four-year deal. The phase out begins at $100,000 for singles, $200,000 joint. So it's a little bit different phase outs. And keep in mind that that deduction is on the half portion of time and a half. So a little bit different from the reporting standpoint. Again, married filing separate, can't do it. So there.
Do you know why that is?
Both of these provisions have that in it, and you know, I don't know mechanically why they didn't just come up with an AGI that would work, but that's what they did.
There are a number of provisions that are like that. It's the I would say of all of the filing status, that's probably the most difficult to navigate for taxpayers. Because there are certain credits and other incentives that aren't allowed to individuals with married filing separate status. And that goes for some, you know, tax brackets as well. So, it's an unusual filing status and a difficult one to navigate.
You know, all these changes, and they happen every year to lesser or greater extent. Dawn, you've been on the other side of the equation. When these changes are rolled out from the Capitol, how crazy is it for the IRS people to figure out what the heck is going on?
It's very difficult to navigate. You know, Congress makes the laws. The Treasury Department is charged with writing regulations to help interpret and bring these things to bear. Besides the forms writing, when you think about the forms that get generated, these are all taking into account both the statutory language that Congress has passed, in addition to the regulatory provisions that need to be written by the myriad of lawyers that are interpreting these laws and preparing these regulations. So there's a lot of processes that go on behind the scenes that we don't know about. Think about the number of taxpaying Americans. That's an awful lot of different laws and situations to navigate.
One point on that. Right. So I just told you about tips and overtime.
Yeah.
Those aren't, you know, you're not magically going to have a box on your W-2 that necessarily tells you that number because the form didn't get revised for 2025.
Oh, nice.
So yeah. Employers may optionally put something in box 14 or they may give you a supplemental statement. But you might struggle a little bit to figure out how much is the right number to claim.
Well, that's okay. That doesn't fill me with a great deal of confidence. If I were someone who got tips or overtime, which I get neither.
Well, the other part of this is the president signed this on July 4th and it went retroactive back to 1-1, right?
Yeah.
So we talked last time when we were down here 2 months ago, you know, tips that are discretionary work. If you walk into a restaurant with a party of six and you get a mandatory fee on your bill, that doesn't count. Okay, so you got an act that was passed the seventh month of the year that's retroactive back to 1-1. How do you figure that out?
Good times. All right, a couple of emails here, then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. We're joined by Dawn Daugherty and Judy Cahey from BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. First email comes in from Frank in Scaticoke. How much by percentage should I take out in extra withholdings so I don't get hit next tax year? Is there a magic formula? And that's from Frank.
No.
Short answer.
So we just told you about tips. We just told you about overtime. You know, the wage withholding tables didn't get revised for those. It's really fact specific, right? You can have a spouse that earns a boatload of money. So the withholding tables don't work well for you. There's a lot of reasons they work or not. I mean, in theory, they're designed to work, but there's times you have to do extra. Now, that being said, some of what we talked about kicked in for 2025. So I think at this point in time, good rule of thumb would be, you know, take a look, file 2025, see where you come out, and then try to go from there. If there's a deficiency and you're chasing that every year, the other thing you can do is check your paperwork on file to see what you're claiming through your employer. Like, okay, you know, how many exemptions are you claiming in there? Do you have something technically incorrect that you have so your withholding isn't quite matching?
All right. And also, Frank wants to know, are settlements taxable?
It depends. It really depends. So a settlement really is the culmination of whatever that legal action was. So if it's a settlement for personal injury, no. But if it's a settlement for compensation, yes. So it's a different answer depending on what the nature of the settlement is. So that is something that needs to be further explored.
Okay. A few questions from Eileen. And usually we go one to a customer, but Eileen's very nice, so we'll try to bang through three of them. One, the inflation checks from New York State.
Yeah.
Could you address that, the taxes that have to be paid on this? How do you report it if the state doesn't require it, but the feds do?
So, yeah, I mean, right now, I would say that would fall into an other income category. How much tax would there really be? It's, you know, maximum amount was what, maybe $400
yeah,
or so?
Yeah, 200 for individuals, yeah. Up to 400 for families.
Yeah, I mean, at that amount, depending on where people are in their own tax bracket, can be a determinant of how much they should withhold. I wouldn't expect a huge tax tab on that.
Okay.
Still better to have, let's say, maximum rate is 37%. Still better to have the residual than zero.
37% is the max rate?
Yes. Now, bear in mind, that's a pretty high bar to get to.
Yeah.
You have to have taxable income of in excess of $625,000 approximately.
Ooh, okay, I'm
to
safe.
To reach 37%.
All right.
Yeah. So you got a ways to go to hit that one.
Question two from Eileen. A CD taken out in 2025 matures in 26. Do you have to report and pay taxes on the interest that accrued in 25 or not until it matures?
So it should be interest as you earned. So your bank should give you a 1099 INT at the end of the year that tells you exactly what you need to pick up.
Okay, last one from Eileen, and then we'll take a break. 800-348-2551. Is this correct? If your total annual donations to a 501c3s are less than an individual standard deduction, there's no point in reporting them as you don't get anything more back. You have to be over the 12K or whatever it is this year. Oh, and if this is correct, tell us. Please tell your listeners to keep donating anyway. Oh, I gotcha.
Oh,
you're working in the fund drive there, Eileen.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Lots of topics there. So let me try to hit those. So when you do your individual return, you optimize between a standard deduction or an itemized deduction, right?
Right.
Standard deduction, married filing joint, it's about $31,500 now if you're not a senior. I just told you at the top of the hour that the SALT limit, the state and local tax limit, which is your income tax and your property tax, can be as high as $40,000. So you have to look at, because this is sort of a fresh slate in tax rules, what's your state tax, what's your charitable contributions, what's your mortgage interest, do you have deductible medical? Put all those in a bucket and figure out if that's better than the published standard.
Uh-huh.
Again, up to 40 is going to change the dial for a number of taxpayers. On the other side of the coin, there's been times during the pandemic and coming back into this bill, at least effective for 2026. For 2026, non-itemizers, those who do claim that standard deduction, will be able to deduct a little bit of charity above the line, we call it. So if you're single, that number's $1,000. If it's married filing joint, that's $2,000. That's a 2026 provision,
okay.
Right? We're getting ready to file 2025 returns.
Right.
So you got to give those, or whether you self-prepare, put your charity into the software, if you use a preparer, give them your receipts and let them figure out how to optimize you to get the best result.
Okay, let's take a quick break here. It's Judy Cahey and Dawn Daugherty from BSD. Taxes today, 800-348-2551 is our number. We'll hit the phones in a moment. Some funky music a la Beretta or one of those 70s detective shows. That's perfect bed for what I'm going to say now. The lockbox is open at WAMC.org. Our fund drive is coming up. The lockbox is filling up fast. You're doing remarkable work. And we ask, if you value what you hear at this radio station, to make your pledge. Together, we keep it going. We're not counting on Washington at this point. We're counting on us. You, me, everybody who listens, WAMC.org. Fill that lockbox. And now, back to the show. Vox Pop on WAMC. The number here is 800-348-2551. Before we hit the phones, Judy, you mentioned something about senior deduction.
Yes. So during the campaign, it was talked about no tax on Social Security, right? Didn't pass. What passed in lieu of it was an additional deduction for seniors, again, 4 years, 2025 to 2028, of up to $6,000 per person. So married, filing joint, you could get 12. As long as your income supports it, right? So it doesn't matter if you claim the standard deduction, doesn't matter if you itemize, it's a separate deduction from both of those. Phase out on income, married filing joint, 150, single, 75. So it starts to phase out from there. It's targeted for those who are 65 or older by the end of the year. Again, they're punitive on the status of married filing separate, can't do it. So it's a lower phase out. And again, phase out starts at those thresholds and you lose 6 cents per dollar. So math to be done. But that's another extra thing that taxpayers will have in play for 2025.
You know, you both have so many numbers and so many calculuses in your heads at all times. How do you get through the day?
Well, we have lots of tax research tools, right? Yeah. So we come in here with our laptops and our books and we try. It's like we never quite know what we're going to get asked or how granular it'll be on the show. So we try to do our best to.
All right.
But we don't know it all.
Well,
we have lots of research tools to help us.
Let's see what you got. We'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. We begin in Lee. Mark, you're on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I'm not employed anymore, and I do get a Social Security check, and I do not have my taxes. I don't have my, and there's no deductions. I get a full check every year. I know I have to pay taxes on that. But do I have to claim my 401k as income?
Yes, you should be receiving a 1099-R for the 401k distributions you're getting out. That shows you the tax.
Well, I'm not. There's no distributions to the 401k. It's like an IRA. It's like it's tied up with stock, but it's not a. It's not a. There's no distributions going into it.
Are you receiving money from that, Mark?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so everything right now is just sitting in your 401k.
Yeah, just sitting there.
Yeah.
And you're below the required minimum distribution age of 73?
No, I'm 68.
Okay.
Oh.
So not taking distributions from it is no taxability, right? So when you start taking those distributions, they'll give you a 1099-R that gives you the amount to report.
Okay. So I can just claim my Social Security statement then, correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. That's good to know.
Mark, thank you.
My only income is my Social Security.
Yeah, unless you have any 1099s from, you know, whatever bank interest or whatever else in life.
No, I don't.
Okay. No. Mark, thanks a lot.
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, buddy. Let's go to Bearsville. Patricia, you're on.
Hi. This is for the person who specializes in nonprofits. I run a nonprofit in Woodstock, and 5 years ago, 2020, well, 6 years ago, our treasurer, who was about 1,000 years old, was toward the end of her burnout period, and she got sick. Then she fell. She ended up in a rehab. She filed late that year, apparently didn't do it correctly. But then she went into a rehab, and then she disappeared to Arizona and resigned, or retired. And then this is all volunteer. And then flash forward to today, IRS is telling us we owe them $5,000 in interest and penalties for that 2020 late, incorrectly filed late taxes. And so now I have to write a letter to the IRS to see if we can, what we could do. Do you have any advice for me?
Yeah, so basically there's a civil penalty the IRS imposes of like $20 per day or a percentage for late filing, right? So you need to make the case for reasonable cause to abate it, right? So penalties can be forgiven by the IRS, and I'm going to look at my friend Don here who's next to me, but the concept is you have to prove the case that there's reasonable cause. You know, explain the circumstances, how odd they were, why it was filed late, and in the eyes of the IRS, as long as they agree with your reasonable cause, they can abate the penalty.
But will they?
I've had very good success with reasonable cause arguments. You know, generally speaking, you know, they understand that life happens, inadvertent things happen, mistakes occur. The idea here is to really encourage voluntary compliance. So voluntary.
Yeah, and I've done like requests like this several times for not-for-profits. And again, you know, the person opening the mail, Patricia, will have no idea what your facts are. So you really got to lay it out for them to say, you know,
okay.
Please.
We can't get like proof of her of anything.
No. But lay out the case in a letter. Yes. You know,
story and send it out.
Yep.
Patricia, thanks a lot for the call. You know, when Dawn said voluntary compliance, she smiled. And,
yes.
And there was a moment of menace there. Like you had your IRS hat on for just a moment.
No, I try not to play any side of this.
Yeah.
We have laws. We comply.
Well, you're on the other side. Now you're on our side. Now.
It's part of our civic duty.
All right. Fair enough. By the way, I don't want to go to too many emails here, but I just want to make sure we covered this enough. Susie in Aiken, South Carolina, just wanted to make sure about the overtime. Susie writes, I had to work a lot of overtime this year due to tariff policy changes. I do not see any breakout of overtime wages on my stubs. Will that be reflected on the W-2s when they come out?
No. It probably not. Look at box 14 and see if it is. And again, employers are being encouraged by the IRS to give a supplemental statement on it to the employees to help compute it. Hopefully your employer does that for you. I mean, my other advice would be, you know, pay stubs, right? Does your employer pay you via, you know, electronic pay stubs where you could go in? Because at least then you could generally see, okay, here's my hourly wage, here's my time and a half wage.
Yeah.
And try to recompute it yourself should you not be given the tools to do so by your employer.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement that probably the pay stubs, if your employer didn't already provide it, is the best place to find it.
So nowadays, and I've never worked a job where we got tips, okay, ever. So I don't, I've been in radio my life. If you, do most places now pull the tips and keep records of these things?
It depends. It really depends on the employer's practices. In larger restaurants, that's pretty commonplace where there's pooling. But in smaller practices, perhaps not.
Okay, what if you're a pizza delivery guy or whatever, and you're getting cash tips? How do you enforce that? You slap it in your pocket, you spend it, right?
I couldn't tell you what people do with their cash.
And remember, to get the deduction on it has to be includable in income.
Yeah, right.
No double dipping.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go to Fisher's Landing, New York. It's Gail's turn. Gail, you're on.
Hi, I'm due a sizable refund on a 2020 return from the IRS. I made an appointment and visited the Syracuse office They told me to wait 6 weeks. That was in September. I still haven't received anything. Is there something else that I can do to get this refund sent to me?
So I don't want to go too granular, but you have, there's a statute of limitations period to get refunds back from the IRS, right? So you have something going where the IRS already that entitles you to this refund?
Yes.
What's the statute of limitations
on
that?
What does that mean?
In other words, did you file an amended return from 2020, or was this your original 2020 filing?
The original return.
Did you file it late?
Yes. It was on an extension.
It was on extension, but not late, correct?
No, it was not late.
So what caused the refund? How long have you been owed that refund, and what caused it?
It was a 2020 return, so I think September is the end of the extension of 2021.
Mm-hmm. So you filed in 2021 and still haven't got it back.
That's right.
Okay.
This sounds like
so. I would strongly recommend that you go online and type in IRS Taxpayer Advocate Service. There is a form on there, a form 911, ironically, at the IRS website, to submit for assistance when normal channels don't get you to where you need to go, right?
Okay. Yep.
So if you've gone to the local office at Syracuse, they aren't getting it. It's been 6 weeks. It's been, 5 years here. I would go get the form 911 from the IRS website. I'd fax it in. They will assign a taxpayer advocate individually to you who will reach out and try to help you resolve this. That's sort of the means when normal channels within the IRS don't work. And it sounds like you've tried normal channels.
All right, Gail.
Okay. Can you give me that website again, that email address?
Well, it's irs.gov, right? So I would go irs.gov and then type in form 911 and bring up the form, and it'll be a PDF fillable, and you'll need to sign it and send it into the IRS.
All right, Gail. Thanks a lot. Now, Catherine wrote in earlier in the show from Forestburg and said, basically the same thing, although it's much more recent. Catherine received a tax refund of $25,000, unless she, I don't know, is that even possible?
Sure.
I filed timely in April of 25, April 20th, 25, and have yet to receive a refund. I received a request to verify my return, which I did. I've heard nothing since. I sent emails to Gillibrand and Schumer and received no reply. This is beyond frustrating. So is this another case where, or should she wait longer? It hasn't been that long.
I'd go visit the local IRS office. I mean, you can call IRS. The best time to call IRS is early in the morning. Mm-hmm. They generally open phone lines up at 7, be on the phone at 7, so you don't have to wait on hold too long. You need to talk to somebody, right? So once in a while, like, we'll file a return, and, for example, the IRS may take a peek at it inside before, what we refer to as desk audit, take a look at something on it before they issue the refund, so it might be flagged for that. But it seems like if she's gotten no correspondence in the mail, I'd be talking to somebody at the IRS.
Now, these taxpayer representatives that you mentioned from Form 911, are they employees of the IRS or are they adjunct?
They are employed by the IRS, but they do not report directly to the IRS commissioner. They have a separate reporting line, and that's on purpose, so that there's fair administration and an independent person involved in helping taxpayers navigate some of the more tricky areas.
Is there enough staff?
Well, recent statistics are indicating that the IRS staff is down by about 25%. And that's, through attrition. There were recent reductions that were encouraged. People were encouraged to retire. So many did take that option. And unfortunately, it does affect the taxpaying public as much as, you know, no one likes the IRS necessarily. It does affect everyone in the level of services that we're able to obtain.
Judy Cahey is here, and Don Daugherty from BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. Let's grab one more call before the next break. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org, and we will check the email bag after the break. Keith is in Albany. Keith, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm wondering if there are any disadvantages to reorganizing your business from a sole proprietorship to an S corporation.
You know, there's advantages and disadvantages to every form of business. If you're currently operating as a sole proprietor, presumably you're filing a Schedule C, you have self-employment tax. If you were to be in an S corp, then you could put yourself on payroll. And you have another filing for certain. You'd have an 1120S filing. What it could accord you, if you're paying more in state taxes and operating in New York State, you have the opportunity to get involved in pass-through entity tax, which provides a nice benefit for business owners in pass-through entities, which is what an S-corp is. And this would allow you to deduct on the S-corp return the state taxes that are imposed on the S-corp income. So it's a little bit of a means of a workaround that was brought on by the states in response to the earlier SALT cap of $10,000 that was in the itemized deductions. Of course, with the expansion of that SALT cap for several years to the $40,000, for some, it might obviate the need to actually get involved in a pass-through entity in order to take advantage of that deduction. But there's administrative things that come along with an S-corp as well. You know, there's filing requirements. And if you're going to be in an S-corp, then you need to think about putting yourself on payroll and a couple of other administrative
things. Keith, we're up against a break, but do you want to follow up real quick?
No, that's answered all my questions. Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. That's the number to call if you're perplexed about taxation, hopefully with representation. Judy Cahey, Don Daugherty are here. We'll be back. God, I love that one. That's from the early 80s. Jaco Pastorius and Three Views of a Secret here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ray Graff with you. It's taxes today. Don Daugherty joins us, and so does Judy Cahey from BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. Bob writes in, born in 1952, are my RMDs automatic, or do I have to set them up? What's an RMD?
Required minimum distribution.
Okay.
So you have a retirement account. You hit the age of 73. You must start taking distributions.
Okay.
Right? Those are not automatic, and you have to set them up. And it's not unusual for taxpayers not to remember or sometimes forget. So I'd strongly encourage you to reach out to your person. Get this year's, you know, I didn't do the math on 73 here, but and then set it up on a recurring basis, right, so that you don't forget and get it out.
All right, this is from Peter in Barryville. My wife inherited stocks from her mother in the form of a trust. She has tried unsuccessfully to have the stocks transferred to her name, but to no avail. And her mother's Social Security number is the only one that appears on the dividend forms. In the past, I simply included the proceeds from the trust on our joint tax return. However, last year I used a tax preparer, and she said that I could not include the proceeds from the trust on my tax form because the Social Security number of my wife's deceased mother appeared on the dividend form. We are only dealing with less than $20,000, but I want to pay any taxes that I may owe and also not get a visit from the IRS. What do I do until I can sort out the Social Security on the dividend forms?
Okay. So you started out by saying this was inherited, right? And that there's a trust. There should be a trustee, and there should be a, technically, there should have been a taxpayer ID number set up for that trust once upon a time. Not sure if that happened or not. And then secondarily, that ID number would have got reported to who's paying the investment income, right? I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV, but the question is, right, can the, if it's insignificant, can the trust make out the distributions? Does it need to stay in trust right now,
okay,
right? That's not a question for me to answer. If it does, then I'd suggest fixing this through getting the ID and getting this set up so that the, you know, there's trust you can form that can report in your Social Security number, but not if it's something somebody else formed and they died. And so it sounds like the proper structure didn't happen once upon a time, and you're dealing with that. And you're right. The IRS does match taxpayer ID numbers to 1099s, and, you know, there shouldn't be something used for a deceased taxpayer. It should have
okay.
had its own ID number.
All right. Dennis in Clifton Park writes in, do you have an opinion of how likely you will be audited given the staff cuts by Trump? Any advice of what issues are audited most frequently?
Audit roulette.
No. Yeah.
Audit roulette.
Yep.
Nice. Little inside joke there. Okay.
Yeah.
You have no idea?
No, actually, it's really hard to determine who's going to be examined and who isn't.
Is it random? I mean, do they...
Sometimes it is, but very often there are indicators on tax returns that may make it more likely to contain errors.
Yeah.
Mismatches, whole round numbers, you know, things that look like maybe we need to look at, you know, ratios of this person's reported items to the general population. So there's a number of things that can drive the risk that of an error in a tax return.
All right. Eric writes in, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Eric writes, the U.S. Postal Service announced a new policy on postmarking such that the received date may be later than the postmark date. Are you familiar with this new policy and how it will affect the filing of tax returns and time-critical tax correspondence?
Okay. If you're mailing anything to the IRS, it should always, always, always be certified and trackable. They, right around New Year's, they came out and said they're changing the policy so that, you know, as is, when you go into the post office and you drop something in the box, it gets postmarked at that date, and now it's going to be postmarked when it hits a servicing center, and that might be multiple days later.
Well, that's not fair.
But that being said, for a number of years, we've told clients, if you are mailing now, last time we were down here 2 months ago, we talked about, you know, the president signed an executive order last year that says payments need to be electronic. And for now, for 2024, we've been okay. Not so there yes. is going to be a point in time here very soon where you won't be able to mail checks or anything else to the IRS. But
correct.
For right now, you can. So again, I'd go back to, if you are mailing something, mail it certified anyway. Rely on a postmark.
Right, and obtain your receipt before you leave the counter.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the phones with Dawn Daugherty and Judy Cahey. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jake and Troy has been waiting a very long time. Oh. Jake, go ahead.
Hey, how are you? I'm a huge fan. I just wanted to say.
Oh, thanks a lot.
My question is, of course. My question is that as a 29-year-old, I haven't been educated as much as I should have been on taxes mm-hmm. and how to file appropriately. I'm worried that in the past 10 years, one of the years I just didn't file.
Okay.
And I haven't heard anything from the IRS. And I was wondering where I can get a jump start on filing for this year and mm-hmm. checking on the status of a prior return.
Okay.
Fair
so
question.
Well, that's two very distinct things,
yes,
right?
Okay.
So let's just say that
right.
for the one that you haven't filed, you need to determine whether or not you have a filing requirement and get that filed, because you have no statute of limitations running on that, meaning the IRS can knock on your door,
Wait.
Right? The IRS can knock on your door
mm-hmm.
20 years from now and tell you you owe tax. So
yes.
you need to figure out, right, what happened in that year and if you have a filing requirement and square that away, right?
Where can I find that information?
So you should have, tax documents from that year, right? Do you have W-2s or anything?
I don't remember. Okay. The thing is, it was within the past 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. I think, and I can't remember which year if I did or did not file.
You can always sign up for an online account with the Internal Revenue Service, and I would highly recommend that you do so in this case. You should be able to obtain information about which tax years you filed, which tax years you have not. You can also make payments on your own behalf on an online account. If that does not give you enough information, I would suggest calling and asking the IRS assister to take a look at your account and determine what was filed and what was not. Now, if you mentioned that one of the unfiled years may have been more than 3 years ago, if that's the case.
Right. So it's only only one unfiled year, and I think it was within the past decade.
Okay. So in that case, if you were due a refund and it's beyond 3 years, you will not receive that refund. You've gone past the period of being able to claim a refund. So I would say the best bet here is for you to contact the IRS, determine if there is an unfiled year. You can request a transcript of all of your wage and investment activity. In other words, the information that's normally seen on your W-2s, 1099s, and things of that sort. That might help you determine whether you even have a filing requirement.
Jake.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Kingston and Freya. Freya, you're on.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, boy.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Zach, the engineer, is about to have an aneurysm. We hear you, Freya.
Oh.
Hello.
You do? You hear me?
Go right ahead. You're on.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, hi, Ray.
Hi.
I love your show.
Thank you.
And I love your jazz picks.
Thank you.
I am an old lady, and I live in Kingston in a place where artists live at a reduced amount, and I have a wonderful studio apartment with my husband. We have our studio here in the apartment. It's lovely.
Okay.
In any event, about 10 years ago, we did our last tax return. I'm 87 now. My husband is going on 90. We show. My husband sold lots of work early in his life, and of course, it's dwindled somewhat at this point. But we were told by our tax consultant, look, if we don't walk away with more than $10,000 in profit, don't worry about it. You don't have to do your taxes anymore. It's not as if we have a huge amount. We don't. And art supplies are very expensive.
Indeed, they are.
You know, we use the good art supplies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if he's right, wrong, or are we supposed to be doing taxes again?
Well, that really depends on how much net income you made from both the art and any other sources you might have. Generally speaking,
well, we have Social Security.
Okay.
That's it.
Social Security, and then from whatever your art may have generated net
right.
of the cost of your supplies. So you'd have to be over, if you're married, filing jointly this year. We're talking 31.5 plus the additional amount, right, for seniors, or is that kicking
yeah,
in
so
at 26?
Yeah, so you know, the general requirement is 31,500 standard,
mm-hmm.
but if you and your husband are both over 65, you get 3,200 more.
Yep.
And if you don't have a bunch of income, I told you there's a new deduction for seniors, so that's, you know, you could have up to 46,700 of
wiggle room.
Mm-hmm.
Before. All right, so we're in great shape.
Sounds like you're in great shape.
Good.
Freya, thank you for calling.
We
really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your answer. I feel good. Thank you.
I knew that you would now. Let's go over to Chuck in Lenox. Chuck, you're on.
Hi, this is an Irma question. I know that if I sell my house, I get a sizable deduction for selling my primary residence on the capital gains. But how does that come into play with regards to the IRMA limits? Does that deduction reduce my AGI, or am I still on the hook for IRMA?
Who's IRMA?
Is the... Go ahead.
Go ahead. You guys tell us who IRMA is.
Are you referring to... the deduction, when you say the deduction for the gain on your primary residence, it's really more of an exclusion rather than a deduction. And that really doesn't affect too much else as far as that source of income is concerned. Now we're talking about your Medicare amount that comes out?
Right. So Medicare is based on your income of 2 years ago. And if you exceed certain thresholds, your Medicare premiums go up dramatically. So if you sell your house and you get a big capital gain based on that, is that capital gain going to drive you above the thresholds where IRMA, it's called IRMA, I forget what the acronym is.
It's your premiums, it's triggered to income, Medicare. I can't think of what the acronym stands for.
Income Medicare related adjustment.
I'm not an expert here, but my anticipation. So, you know, you're right. There's a 121 exclusion. So if you're single, it's $250,000 of gain. If it's married, filing joint, it's $500,000 of gain. If you're going to have a capital gain beyond that, it could push your modified gross income into a different rate for that. That, you know, I'm not 100% sure, but it definitely, you know, if that's an income-based, you know, equation, it could.
Okay, sure.
But the deduction that you get, the $500,000 for a couple, that deduction is going to bring down your AGI.
It's an exclusion. It's an exclusion. So let's say hypothetically you sold your house and you had a, you know, $250,000 gain. That gets excluded and ultimately not even... not even reported, because you get to exclude the first
like
$250,000.
You're not taxed on.
Income.
Yeah.
That's income that never happened, really.
Right.
More or less, from a tax perspective, that's correct.
All right, Chuck, thanks a lot. We only have about 90 seconds or so, but I want to get this one in from Richard in Albany. Richard, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I do have a friend, legitimately, who got two letters from the IRS, one of which says that they owe taxes for the 2022 year when they earn nothing, and the other says that they have a $5,000 fine for a frivolous filing.
Oh.
Sounds like...
This sounds... Either it could be
identity
fakes,
theft?
Yes, or identity theft. That's what it sounds like.
Okay.
Like someone may have filed on their behalf.
It's odd. Second question first, right? We see that, you know, people, a lot of Social Security numbers have been hacked, right? And people file fraudulent returns and try to get refunds to the tune of significant numbers, right?
Uh-huh.
So I would not respond to that notice. I wouldn't call on that note. I wouldn't call any phone numbers on that notice.
So
I would pick
fake.
Up the phone. And call the legitimate IRS website. Go to their website, get a legitimate phone number, call them up, and make the inquiry on it through them. And then your first question, I lost your first question. What was the first part of that?
It was about a frivolous.
Well, it was just
the 22.
Frivolous filing. What do they mean by a frivolous filing?
Frivolous filing is sometimes it will receive that designation if someone says, I'm protesting, I'm sending this form in, it has nothing on it, I'm claiming a $1 billion refund.
Okay.
That would be a frivolous filing. I know that sounds, you know, ludicrous, but, you know, there are things that can trigger that sort of response.
All right, we're about out of time. Kathy in Clintondale just said this. If the IRS owes you money on a return, you have up to 3 years to file. True or not true?
Generally speaking, you have the 3-year statute of limitation or 2 years from the date of payment, whichever is later.
Okay, well, that's where we will have to leave this. Now, Judy Cahey and Don Daugherty of BST. You guys are the best. Do you have a website? You have a website, right?
Of course we do. Well, BSTCO.com.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
We'll see you. I know you're booked again, right? So we'll see you again in 26.
Yes, you will.
All right, good luck with the tax season.
Thank you, sir.
Support comes from Interactive Media Consulting, proudly providing digital marketing for New Innovation Center, a marker space. No, I can't read. A maker space in Saratoga County, Innovation Center, Saratoga.org for details. At Capital Roots, celebrating 50 years of helping make local food and green spaces accessible to all through mobile markets, community gardens, and programs, capitalroots.org. One of these years, I've been on radio 38 years or something like that, I'm going to learn to read. And I promise you, it's going to be wonderful for everybody. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. Oh, we'll talk tea with Mike Harney of Harney & Sons. We'll see you too.